Blog Talk Radio.
King Street, DC Metropolitan News and Real Estate Information.
Audience, welcome to King Street. I'm your host, King. Hope everyone out there is doing great. I know that I'm doing great. I'd like to begin my show with starting with a gratitude moment, what I'm grateful for. Begin every show like that. I believe every day should begin that way. And that's just something I want to instill into the listening audience. And as we talk about building conscious communities, everything centers on what I consider to be what I call a grateful spirit. So I'm grateful for my life, for my health, for my ability to be able to walk, talk, stand, breathe, and have a sound mind. Grateful for another 24 hours, pursue my purpose in life. Grateful for being able to produce this show, getting back in the mix of doing shows. And I'm also grateful for the infinite possibilities that this day will provide. So now with that being said, this is our first show of the new year, our first show in several months, primarily because of dealing with a lot of climbing out of a hole that COVID put us into. So that was a challenge. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But definitely grateful to be here on the air. Definitely going to have the call open up. So if you're listening and you want to call in, the call-in number is 319-527-6232. Again, that's 319-527-6232. Now, with that being said, again, this is King Street. We're going to talk about investing in Baltimore City. We're going to talk about several topics today, like number one, how to understand, how to figure out what's the best neighborhood to invest in Baltimore City. And of course, that depends on your exit strategy, you know, but I have my preference. I have my favorites. I'm going to talk a little bit about why I chose certain neighborhoods and what I look for in neighborhoods to be appealing to me. We're going to talk about how to analyze purchasing residential properties so you can understand what's the thought process and the methodology that I go through for purchasing and analyzing residential properties. Now, if you're a real estate investor already, I'm sure you already have your process for determining how to analyze a property. Mine's a little different because, again, at the end of the day, I think everything stems on the exit strategy, you know, and that's the next thing we're going to talk about is how to determine the best exit strategy, right? The exit strategy can be, do you want to buy and hold the property, meaning that you're going to buy the property, you're going to rent the property out. That's one exit strategy. Another exit strategy may be, depending on where you are in the real estate investment business, you may be a wholesaler. If your exit strategy, obviously, is to wholesale it to another investor, right? And that investor, his exit strategy may be to renovate and resell. I don't like to use the term flip. A lot of people say renovate and flip. I like resell because to me, I'm always about creating value. So value is very important. So renovate and resell, that's another extra strategy. Another extra strategy could be you want to actually lease the property out. You know, you want to actually create a lease agreement and structure it where you're going to sublease it to someone else. And that to me is my preferable strategy. That's the one I like to do. And that's one we're going to talk more about in more detail today. Then we're also going to talk about how to manage residential properties. You know, so once you get control of a property or once you own a property and once you finish renovating the property, how do you have to manage that property? You know, be a property manager, understanding what that entails, what that looks like, and how you go about doing that. Or you can go out and start and be your own property manager first, because that will allow you to learn the business of property management. Because if you never managed a property before, and just because you have the credit and the money and you're able to get the property renovated or get control of the property, I'm telling you, managing the property is a whole other nightmare if you don't have the experience. And you don't want to put yourself, and I'm telling you this from experience, I did all of this, and I'm sharing with you some mistakes I've made to prevent you from making those same mistakes. I came in and I hired, you know, someone sold me a real estate investment deal. I was someone who was new to real estate investing, never bought a real estate investment deal. This guy was a good friend of mine, and he sold me the property. I'll talk more about the deal a little later on. And long story short, I became became a property manager. So I tried to hire a property manager, but not knowing what a property manager does, what the property manager charges, you know, I was pretty much at the mercy of the property manager to kind of walk me through that process. And you never want to be at the mercy of someone who you're paying to guide you through what their responsibilities are. You want to already have that experience so you can vet them and interview them. This is where I'm going with that. We're also going to talk about how to locate good investment deals. You know, I think that's key. I think that's important. You know, how you locate good investment deals. And what I mean by that is not so much doing the research to find good investment deals. I mean, also knowing how to evaluate when someone sends you a deal. You know, because wholesalers will send you deals, and then if you don't know how to evaluate whether that's a good investment deal for you, then you may end up pulling the trigger, and then later on you're disappointed because it didn't really work out for you the way you thought or what you had envisioned. And then, of course, we got what properties to avoid, the last thing we'll talk about. And so, you know, because there are certain properties you just want to stay away from, again, depending on your exit strategy. So everything I'm going to say always has the caveat of depending on your exit strategy. Because your exit strategy is always going to be key to determining whether or not, you know, where you buy, how much you're going to spend, what you put into the renovations. All that's going to determine or be determined by your exit strategy. So that's always going to be number one case in point. So with that list being said, let's start off our discussion. So let me begin by first saying who I am, so you get a little bit of understanding of why you should listen to me for the hour. And hopefully, you know, call in if you have any questions, and why I promote or call a conscious real estate investor's mindset, because that's where I really promote, and that's what I really advocate, and that's what I live my life with. So with that being said, my name is King. My full name is Christopher King, but I go by King, you know, because everybody hates Chris. Now, normally I would get laughs from that because people get the show, but in general, I go by King because, you know, I spent time working for the military, wasn't in the military, but working for the military. Got used to being called by my last name. That's what they do in the military. And it's a great way of distinguishing myself from all the Chris's in the world. Because, you know, when you tell people your name is Chris, Christopher, the first thing they do is they shorten it to Chris every single time. Every time I say, oh, my name is Christopher, first thing someone says, well, how you doing, Chris? Which I find to be extremely ignoring. I didn't want to be Chris anymore by the time I got to be an adult. I stopped being Chris, right? So long story short, King is my name. That's what I go with. It's my last name, but that's what I prefer to be called. Now, with that being said, I have over 25 years experience in the real estate investment business. I brought my first property back in 98, and it was in D.C., and that was the property I was referring to earlier where a close friend of mine who was a real estate investor, one of the guys who I would say probably one of the sharpest minds as far as creative financing, structuring deals, things of that nature in Baltimore, I mean in D.C. that I've ever met, or period. I saw him negotiate deals, turn something into nothing using techniques like owner financing, doing what they call land trust deals, you know, just pretty much creative financing as a way to get control of property. And I saw him do that with a property he had in Fort Washington. It was a property that was on the water. This was back in, again, the early 2000s. This property was on the water in Tantalia in Fort Washington, and it had a dock going to it. Now, he was able to talk to the owner of the property into giving him control of their property for basically 10 grand down. And I think he was paying maybe about 4 to 5 grand a month. And the owner, it worked out for both. The owner was trying to sell their property. And this is, you know, before the market really boomed in the real estate market boomed in the Maryland area. So the owner was stuck with a property that he couldn't sell. And he was losing money on every month because he had already moved out of the property and was living somewhere else and paying two mortgages on the property. So those things caused him to be in a situation where it created that urgency, you know. And if you're new to real estate investing or you've been in real estate investing and you're taking real estate investing classes, you know that the urgency is always what people are looking for. How do I get to that urgency? You know, how do I find a homeowner or a property owner who is motivated, that motivated property owner, right? That's what you're always looking for. And this gentleman was motivated. And depending on that motivation, you can get great deals. And if you're not conscious, you can take advantage of people. So anyway, long story short, this gentleman got control of their property, again, property in Tantalia, on the water with a dock, and lived in it for some time. You know, he put some money in it, and the owner financed it, so he eventually was able to sell the property to another buyer, I think like maybe 10 years later, and pay the owner off as well as make him a profit. So he basically got control of that property for, like I said, 10 grand. So it was a great deal. But he put a lot of money into the property, fixing the landscape up, doing renovations on the inside, make him a little more comfortable in his home. But he still made profits from the property. And he was the first person that I knew that really championed that D.C. was going to change. This was back before D.C. went through his major renovation, his major revival and transformation. And he was advocating that it was going to change. And no one believed him. I believe him because he's a close friend of mine and he knew more about real estate than I did. So I didn't have enough knowledge not to believe him. And he was buying a property, getting control of the property. You know, a lot of his properties he was buying for like 70, 80 grand. Same properties I see now in D.C. that's selling for $1 million, $2 million. So that tells you right there that getting into real estate and timing is everything to determine whether or not you're going to be successful in real estate investing. But going back to this gentleman, like I said, he sold me my first property. My first property was a row house in D.C. And he offered me this deal. And I asked you all who are listening, would you take the same deal? Now, I was a person that at this time had never owned any real estate, didn't really know much about real estate. You know, like most people, I was curious about real estate because you always hear so many people are making money in real estate. So many people are doing real estate deals, et cetera, et cetera. You always hear that. Well, I knew that I needed to get into real estate because I was, you know, working as a system engineer. I was making six figures. I was in my early 20s and, you know, I didn't have any kids. So, you know, people were telling me I need a tax write-off that real estate provided. I just started me a business. I needed different things to get tax write-offs. I could have had kids, but wasn't so much interested in having kids. Still not. It's a different story. So he came to me with a deal. He knew that I was interested in real estate investing. He knew that he knew how to structure deals. But again, you know, that's what he did. When you're in this business, you got to be able to structure the deals. And so he brought me a deal and he offered me the deal. And the deal was this. He said, listen, how about if I sell you a house that you can pay for? The house would be $126,000. And on top of that $126,000, I will pay and cover all the closing costs. So you don't have to come out of your pocket with any money at all, zero money. So when people say, you know, no money down, but you still go there and you still got to pay for the home inspection, you still got to pay for settlement costs, you still got to pay for taxes and, you know, your part of the taxes and transaction fees. There's still a lot of other fees with real estate. So it's never really no money down out of your pocket. That's a misnomer, you know. But he was talking about truly zero money out of my pocket. I wouldn't have to come to the table with nothing. And he said, on top of that, he was also going to give me $10,000. I'm like, whoa, $10,000 and the property, and I don't have to pay any closing costs? I mean, you know, I didn't know about closing costs then, but I knew I didn't have to come out of my pocket with anything, you know, the appraisal fee, any of those fees? He was like, no, I got all that for you, plus 10 grand. And at settlement, all you got to do is open your hands up to receive the key. And so for me, I was interested in that. So, okay, that sounds good. I'm interested. Let's do that, right? Again, a lot of this was also because I trusted him as a friend. So I didn't think he would take advantage of me, and I thought he would really walk me through the process. That's the mistake I've learned, one of the first mistakes I've learned. I don't really blame him for this, but it's something that I've learned from my own understanding, and my recommendation for you is this as well. Regardless of who it is that you're doing business with in real estate, this is the reason why you want to put things in writing. You want to make sure that before you sign your name on a loan or a, mortgage on a property, anything, real estate contract, signing up a real estate professional, contractors, before you put your name on anything, that you understand what you're signing and what you're getting yourself involved with. Don't ever let anyone tell you, when they explain the contract, all this means, and they try to summarize it for you. Make sure that you ask questions. Make sure you take time to read it. And even the real estate contracts, for the first time, I know they're long, and I think they intentionally those real estate contracts that's by the real estate commissions that's created by Mars, when real estate commission or DC, the greater DC real estate commission that's always the realtors use. I think they intentionally set those up to be long-winded, very verbose, so that you're forced to hire a real estate agent to work with you. And because, who's going to read through all that? Say even the real estate agents don't know all the details of the contract. Because most people never sit down, and the print is small. It's not even conducive for reading. It's not how normal adult humans read, but the thing that's going to be your most greatest purchase probably for most people in their lives, comes with this very wordy, very verbose contract. So I'm just saying that real estate is one of the businesses that is designed to take advantage of you. The culture, I should say, is designed to take advantage of you if you don't know about real estate. It's designed to capitalize on your ignorance. And again, I want to open the lines up for a call. If you're listening to this show and you want to call in and ask a question pertaining to our topics, or just want to ask a real estate investment question in general, again, the call-in number is 319-527-6232. Again, it's 319-627-6232. So, again, going back to what he offered me, again, tell me I can buy a newly renovated house because he bought the property. He renovated it. I can buy it for $126,000. It was a row house in D.C. on R Street. He would pay all the closing costs, so I won't have any money out of my own pocket to put into the property, or I have to bring any money to the closing table, as they say. I would have to literally come to the table with nothing out of my pocket. And he would give me 10 grand. I said, I'm going to do it. And I did it. Now, made lots of mistakes, made a tremendous amount of mistakes with that deal. And that's what you're going to do in real estate. That's my whole point I was saying to you earlier, that people play on your ignorance. People play on your lack of knowledge, from the real estate agent that you're going to work with, to the lender that you're going to work with, to the contractors that you're going to hire to do work for you, to the home inspector, to the appraiser, all these people who are in the real estate business going to take advantage of your ignorance. And I'm not saying everybody who's a professional in real estate is bad. That's not what I'm saying. There's some good people out there. But what I'm saying is that you don't want to rely upon them to be as honest and ethical as possible. You want to make sure that you take on some of the responsibility for yourself to at least have some basic understanding of what is involved in the appraisal process. What questions should I ask an appraiser, right? What questions should I ask a home inspector? So these are things I'm advocating. Get that basic knowledge so you have questions and you're not just sitting there all totally at the disposal of this person to just pretty much explain everything from start to finish. That's not the position you want to be in, because I can assure you, unless you're truly fortunate and you just come across the most ethical, honest real estate agent you can find, the most ethical, honest lender you can find, the most ethical, honest home inspector and appraiser you can find, that more likely that's going to be difficult to do. And I wouldn't count on that being a process. Because if you're an investor, not just a homeowner, a home buyer, you're going to buy multiple properties. So in case you're able to get that done on the first deal, that definitely won't be your experience going forth with real estate. You're always going to be dealing with folks who are going to be unethical and try to take advantage of you in real estate. So anyway, as I was saying, he offered me the deal. I agreed to the deal, brought the property, made mistakes. Mistake number one I made, I did not get a home inspection. Didn't know one existed. Didn't know I had an option to get a home inspection. He didn't offer me the home inspection. You know, he didn't say, you know, you should get a home inspection. You know, so again, that's why I say I don't blame him for that. I blame myself, because I should have taken the time to do the research to understand the home buying process, what's involved in a home buying process. There's classes out there for home buyers, but there's not really classes out there for investors. There's people who teach that. They always got a fee, you know, so, and they're charging thousands of dollars. Homeowners can get it for free, or, you know, less than $100, depending on the nonprofit you go to. But nowadays, you can actually watch videos on YouTube and really get a firm understanding of what questions to ask. YouTube is a great source to get started from. It's not the ending place for you, but it's a great place to get you started so you can learn what questions to ask. So that way you can sign up and enroll in classes to get to further get more information. So because I didn't get a home inspection, you know, I realized that the renovation that he had done was really lackluster. You know, again, I don't really blame him for it, because again, he was following the same typical model that most people do, which is, you know, you want to buy the property for as low as you can, which is what they teach you, and then you want to also put the least amount you can in it, you know, and you want to try to make the most you can from it. That's a typical real estate model that most investors try to follow. I want to pay the least amount of money for the property. I want to put the least amount of renovations into the property I can, so I can maximize my profit. And to me, that's what I call unconscious real estate investing. That's unconscious real estate investing. And that would always lead to people being unhappy in a transaction. I've learned, and I believe, and I advocate for conscious real estate investing. And that's where you make sure that you create win-wins. And you can create win-win deals in real estate. You can, or you can walk away from the deal. You know what I'm saying? If it's not going to be a win-win, you can walk away from it. And sometimes it's best to do that. Sometimes all money is not good money. All money is not money that you should take just because it's there and because it's been offered. Believe me when I tell you that. Now, the next thing is, what I suggest to you is that you want to begin to really build upon your knowledge of real estate investing by starting with shows like what you're listening to right now. It's free. You get a chance to call in. Again, the call-in number for the listening audience out there, anyone who wants to call in, again, area code 319-527-6232. Again, it's 319-527-6232. So as I was telling you about this deal, I bought the property, and instantaneously I became a property owner, which meant that I was a landlord, because now I have to go, and I didn't want to live in the property. So let me make that clear. It was a neighborhood at that time. The neighborhood had not changed. The DC had not flipped. This is the beginning. This is at the beginning of the beginning, right? So the neighborhood had a carryout next door to it. The carryout had abandoned. The top of the carryout was abandoned. They sold drugs in that neighborhood. So I had no interest of living in that property at all. You know, I had a nice apartment in Silver Spring, Maryland, where I was living in. Had a beautiful balcony. I can look out and see, you know, a beautiful view from my balcony. I was on the 22nd floor. I was not about to give that up to live in the hood in D.C. at that time. Plus, you know, I was young. I didn't know any better. So I had to choose that I was going to be a landlord. I had to rent the property out. I had to find tenants. And finding tenants, that was something, again, no experience, didn't know what to do. He gave me some ideas, some suggestions, you know, put an ad in the paper, put an ad out on, you know, different billboards, you know, put ads in the supermarket on the billboard at the supermarket, you know, things of that nature. And I did that. I followed his suggestions and I got folks to call me. But again, never having experience, not knowing what I was doing, I didn't know how to qualify a tenant. You know, yeah, you can go to Staples, and that's what I did. Went to Staples, and I had to get a, you know, rental application for Staples, but I didn't know what it said, but it's just what Staples had. You know, that was the process. So quickly read through it, modified it to fit what I was looking for, and began to engage in conversations with potential tenants. Now, of course, you know, I'm looking to, because I got a high interest rate. That's their part of the conversation off, or the story off. I got a high interest rate on a loan because at that time I brought in DC. Even the lender told me at that time, this is, again, I'm stressing this, but this is before the market turned in DC. So the lender was like, why in the world would you want to go buy a house? And my house was built like in 1905, right? Why would you want to buy a house that was 95 years old? Because, again, I did this 99. Why would you want to buy a house that's 95 years old in the hood, in D.C., and you can buy a brand new house with your credit and the money you make in the suburbs? And it was pretty much a legitimate question. But I wasn't looking to buy a house to be a homeowner at that time. I was single. I didn't have any kids. And so for me, I wasn't looking to be a homeowner, and I did not want to live way out in the suburbs somewhere that was away from the activity. I was in my 20s. You know, I didn't want to go live in some, you know, neighborhood that was way out in the suburbs, that was away from all the activity that a 22-year-old wants to get involved in, and, you know, nightlife, and I wasn't interested in that. So I talked about that. So basically, because of where I was buying it, I got a loan for about maybe 8% at that time, which is ridiculous compared to what they offer right now in interest rates. It was ridiculous at that time. But again, didn't know any better. Didn't know I should go around and shop to look at different lenders. I let him pretty much structure the whole process. It was his lender. His lender was willing to give me a loan. He had pretty much worked everything out. So all I had to do was just come to the table and sign up, you know, sign my name. So buy the property. My mortgage ended up being, again, the purchase price is $126. My mortgage ended up being $1,300 a month on $126,000 property, which is insane, right? But that was my mortgage. So I had to rent the property out. I wanted to rent it out for $1,500, $1,700 a month, so I could at least make a $5 a month profit. That's what I'm thinking. But, of course, I didn't do my market research. Didn't research the neighborhood. I just knew it was a bad-looking neighborhood. I'm not from D.C. and didn't want to live in that neighborhood. All those things led to problems. So I wasn't able to get the tenant that I wanted. And so after about 2 months and me still having to pay the mortgage on that property and losing money because now he gave me 10 grand, but, you know, I had to take $2,500 out of that 10 grand to put it into the rent to keep my credit good. So I really didn't get 10 grand now. Now I'm down to $7,500, right? So you see how this thing begins to work itself out. So once my tenants moved in, that's when they started finding problems with his renovations that he had done. He added a half bath in the basement. The half bath had issues and had problems. The toilet seat wasn't correct. He didn't really tap into the plumbing correctly. So the toilet seat or the toilet constantly backed up. You know, so that was an issue. The vanity wasn't put in properly. Like, he probably paid about maybe $4,000, $3,000 to put in a new half bath to an area that did not have a half bath. And it was not a good a renovation at all. So the tenants had problems. And then, of course, the tenant couldn't pay me what I wanted. I had to accept what he could afford. And he basically paid me $50 less than what my mortgage was. And I accepted that because I didn't want to have another month where I had to pay another, you know, $1,300 a month. So I accepted $1,250 a month. He's a young guy, pretty much younger than me. And he was from D.C., knew D.C., and his occupation was biking. You know, he rode bikes as a carrier. And he had his roommates move in with him. He had three roommates. It was a three-bedroom, one-and-one-half bath row house, two levels, and didn't have a basement. And so each of them stayed in the room. So he was the one I dealt with the most because he was the main person I signed the lease. And he had two other people in the property to help him offset the expenses. Well, of course, they didn't pay on time. Being young, being youthful, smoking a lot of marijuana. So when I would go by there to collect the rent, I was smelling marijuana coming from the house. And then marijuana now is not such a bad thing for people. But back in 2000, it was. You didn't want to have marijuana coming out of your house that you just brought, right? You didn't want that experience. So paid late, smoked marijuana, dirty the house up, you know, so eventually I ended up putting them out. Basically 8-9 months down the road. Start the whole process again of looking for another tenant. This time I was a little smarter, a little wiser, because you learn, hopefully, wisdom comes from either learning from your mistakes or learning from someone else's mistakes. So learning from my mistake this time around, I said, and I was being told by people, you should rent out to the Section 8 program. You know, they'll pay maximum rent, you know. Well, Section 8 at the time didn't want to put my house in the program because it was missing things like rails. It didn't qualify. So I couldn't use Section 8 without me having to spend money to put into the property in order to make it work. So I didn't use Section 8. Now, I did find a program in D.C. that worked with folks who were dealing with AIDS, you know, and they pretty much paid 90% of the rent. And I thought, well, it's a great program. I don't mind a person having AIDS. I'm not going to be physically intimate with them. So I didn't care about that. I wasn't going to discriminate. You know what I'm saying? And plus, I met the guy. He was a cool gentleman. You know what I'm saying? Him and his roommate. They moved into the house. Then with them being cool, so yeah, finally got a tenant that can pay most of the rent. So I was happy with that. A tenant who was not going to be smoking marijuana and tear my property up, was happy with that. But this tenant came with his standards of what he expected in the property. The previous tenant didn't complain as much, but this tenant complained a lot. Reported me to the D.C. as far as, you know, landlord and tenant office. I got fines levied against me. I had to go in and tear the whole kitchen up because the joists, the guy didn't replace the joists in the kitchen. I had to replace the joists and put my tenants in the hotel because they had to literally tear the entire kitchen floor up and repair the joists. So all that to say, property was a nightmare. Situation was a nightmare. It was costing me money, hand over fist. The heat, the boiler broke on the property on one of the coldest days in the wintertime. Again, I went down there and brought a whole bunch of heaters to put in the property. It was actually colder in the house than it was outside. The heaters, I brought like six of them. All that did was raise the electric bill to a crazy level. Problem, right? Long story short. Again, if you want to be a part of this discussion, this is King Street. We're talking about real estate investing. We're talking about the first deal I did in real estate investing and why it's important to get as much education and information as you can to avoid some of the problems I'm sharing with you that I went through. Calling number is 319, area code, 527-6232. Again, 319-527-6232. So, again, I say all this to say, long story short, as I made a very long story. So I spent $126,000 on this property. The 10 grand really wasn't that valuable a deal. I realized that what he had done was, at this time, you can't do it anymore because they've taken away the appraiser from being a part of the process. So the real estate professionals and you as a property owner or buyer can't talk to the appraiser anymore, right? The lender or the appraiser, he comes out. You sign off, you pay for it, but you don't get a chance to pick and choose what appraiser you want. My guy chose his own personal appraiser. His appraiser appraised the property where he wanted it to be, which was 126, right? And what he did was he brought the property to $20,000. He put like $40,000 in it, which was 60. He sold it to me for 126. So basically, he had an $86,000 profit window with him. So paying all my closing costs, which came out to be like $6,000, and then give me $10,000 in cash, which is basically my equity anyway, because he took it all the way to the top level. It was better for me to just pay him, you know, 116 instead of 126. You know, I learned all of that, and it forced me to get into real estate investing, which is why I want to tell you who I am. Because I went through that ordeal and went through all those pains and all that issues and all those challenges, that made me decide to quit my career, which was in IT, and get more into real estate so I can make sure that that situation never happened to me again. That's what I wanted to make sure of. And I was able to do that. I studied real estate extensively. I took courses and classes on real estate. I've been a real estate investor, real estate developer. I've been a foreclosure counselor, mediator. I've been a credit counselor. I've been a homeownership education coordinator. I've been a real estate agent. So I pretty much have set in on every aspect of real estate all the way around. And I've been a home buyer and a homeowner, right? So I've been all around real estate in that context as far as it relates to residential real estate. And so that's my background. Now, here's one important lesson I did learn from the whole process. That is that in real estate, time cures all wounds, especially if you buy in an area where you do your research and you realize that the city plans to make some major changes and make some major improvements, then you will learn that real estate appreciates. Appreciation means, for those who don't know, is it goes up in value over time. And appreciation is measured in percentage. So, you know, typical is about 6% appreciation. So you buy a house for $100,000 in 12 months, you know, in most performing markets, then the property should be worth $100,000 in a year, 12 months. Then it goes up from $106,000 to 6% more, and so on and so forth. So if a property averages 6% appreciation over a 10-year period of time, then the property basically doubles in value. Now, again, it doesn't have to get 6% every single year. It just has to average 6% over a 10-year span, and then that property is worth double than what you paid. That's 100% more than what you paid. So I paid $126, the property would have been worth $272 in 10 years, right? That's a normal real estate market at 6% appreciation. Well, fortunately for me, I didn't have to wait 10 years. DC market started to change, started to boom. I went back to my friend, told him, listen, yeah, get me out of this property. It's costing me money. It's a headache. It was a great learning lesson, but I didn't want it anymore, right? And again, me still not really learning more about real estate market at that time. 3 years later, I was able to sell that property for $352,000. So you see, that's another important lesson, that time cures all wounds, and you have to figure out how to survive until the time cures the wound. So renting out the property is an excellent way to do that. So that's my background, folks. I'm an engineer by training, system engineer. I build systems, and I brought a systematic process, a systematic thinking to real estate investing. And I created my company called the Conscious Real Estate Investors Roundtable so that you can understand, or for investors like myself who are new, can understand a logical process for getting involved in real estate investing. So then I moved up to Baltimore City about 5 years ago to do what he taught me in D.C., that there's going to be change coming to Baltimore City. There's going to be, you know, basically white folks are going to be interested in living in the city, and that's what drives up real estate investing, our home prices. Let's just be honest. When white people are interested in real estate, and it's not a racial statement, it's not a racist statement, it's just a fact, folks. When white people are interested in real estate, the property value goes up. If white people are not interested in real estate, the property value doesn't go up much or doesn't go up at all. And in the hood, for all these decades, white people was not interested in living in the neighborhoods and the inner cities. So the property value stays stagnant. Now, millennials, Generation X, millennials, those folks want to live in the city. They tired, can even from the suburbs. You know, the cities join and do development to put more things in the city, so the cities have a lot more to offer. So if you work in the city, there's restaurants, there's entertainment. And so it's better to live in the city instead of driving around back to the suburbs. So all that increases the value, the interest, the demand, and housing. And that's what makes the property values go back up. So I moved to Baltimore City, coming like Paul Revere to say, listen, the change is going to come to Baltimore like it did in D.C. I witnessed it firsthand. I experienced it firsthand. I created a company to teach people how to go about real estate investing. And I realized the challenge in Baltimore, though, was different in D.C. was that you had blocks and blocks of blighted property here in Baltimore City. So my goal was, how do we go about buying these properties and making it profitable for us? And the best way to do it was to buy the block, because the worst thing you want to do is buy one house. Because you look at a block in Baltimore City, they may have, you know, 32 houses on that block. I mean, 32 houses in that block. And then you got 16 houses on each side. Well, you may have one or 9 to 10 properties that are actually occupied, and then the rest are blighted, right? So you don't want to just buy one house, fix it up, and then try to put someone else in that property like I did when you say, I'm not going to live in that neighborhood. So you want to buy as many properties in that block as you can. And that's the model of the round table, buy the block. That's pull our resources. So we come together as a tribe and we pull our resources together, and we, you know, instead of all of us buying properties throughout the city, we want to buy a property strategically on that same block. And that's pretty much the round table's model. Again, I'm going to open a call up. We got basically 10 more minutes left in the show. I want to open the lines up again for anyone who want to call in, ask any questions, or join the discussion. It's 319-527-6232. Again, 319-527-6232. And so just laid out to you who I am, who's my background. Now, I didn't get a chance to get into analyzing properties as much. I was hoping my story can cover a lot of that. So basically, going with my first topic, as I said before, analyzing purchasing real estate property, residential properties. There's tools that you can do this for free. There's tools you can use to purchase. My recommendation, depending on where your real estate investment experience is, I'll start with Zillow. Now, some people will tell you Zillow is not good. I think it's a good first step. It's not the end all. Don't end with Zillow. Don't let Zillow be your determining factor of why you choose or don't choose to buy a property, but let it kind of let you lead you to more information. Because Zillow will give you property sales, it'll give you a decimate. You can pretty much look at the decimate. The decimate is usually off, particularly in Baltimore City. You can't really go with Zillow's zestimate in Baltimore City, because Zillow uses, you know, comps that are more than 6 months old. They use comps that are more than off that block. And Baltimore is a city where you really want comps. You really want good, strong comps. Those comps should be on the block, preferably. Those are the best comps. Same block, not same neighborhood, not same zip code, but same block. So we're talking about the 1300 block of North Avenue, and you buying a house at 1304 North Avenue, you want a comp that's like 1310 North Avenue, 1320 North Avenue. You want a comp that's in that same block, not a comp that's 1410, 1510. Because literally 1400 block of North Avenue could be selling for, houses could be selling for $180,000. But the 1300 block of North Avenue, the house is still selling for 60. And you're trying to take that 1400 block comp into that block, and they want to praise for that. And then you get sticker shock. So don't do it. Block by block. Trust me. Best comp. Sometimes you can't find comps on that block. Yeah, that's going to be a challenge a lot, because it's not been a lot. Depending on the neighborhood, depending on where you buy in Baltimore City, you may not be able to find comps even on that, even within two or three blocks. Those are some of the challenges. But again, Zillow feels a good first step, because Zillow will show you just kind of what the sales activity has been in that area. Often that. It will show you the tax record of what the property owner paid. That's important information. You can see what they paid for compared to what they're selling it for. All right, so Zillow is a good first step when you want to do analyze purchasing real estate properties. And then you also want to, you know, get knowledge as far as how to go about figuring out what you do to renovate a property. And the best way to go about doing that, folks, is you want to renovate properties by one of the cheapest ways to learn the cost of construction is first learn the price of the actual appliances, things you put in the property. Learn that price, right? Because you will learn those prices, like how much does a toilet cost, right? You will learn that. You will know that. How much does a vanity cost? How much does a tub cost? How much does floor tiling cost? Hardwood flooring, how much does carpet cost? You will know these things. So when you're talking to a contractor, you can now talk to him and make sense to let him know when he gives you an estimate, is that estimate including prices and labor, or is it just, you know, labor? Because you don't want price and labor. You just want labor. And that's how you want to be able to evaluate your contractors on what's your labor rate, right? And that's where you can make a determination of whether or not the labor is a good labor rate or not, is that question. Now, next thing you want to look at and you want to identify with is understanding what it takes to, what's the after repair value. That's something you want to look at and begin to understand, and you get that from looking at comps, right? So again, that's just a really quick run through of purchasing residential properties. The best exit strategy, again, is lease option. That's my preference. We're running out of time here, getting to the top of the hour. This is going to be a 50-minute show, so we basically got 2 minutes left in the show. And I'm just going to say that this is going to be the first show I've done literally in about 18 months, recovering from COVID, changing my business model. But this is going to be consistently every Wednesday at 2 p.m. We're going to be doing the Conscious or the King Street Show. We're going to be discussing these things, but it's all going to be based on Baltimore City. It's all going to be specific to Baltimore City. And so with that being said, folks, I want to thank you for listening to the show. We're going to get more into based on your questions, you know, calling in. I'm going to make sure we get the marketing out there so we can generate more interest and really build up a good show, because we're going to really discuss some good strategies. But more importantly, you're going to learn in our next show why lease options are the best strategy to get into and how you can make money from lease options, get control of properties far less than it is trying to do all these other strategies. And really, when you want to get to a point in real estate investing, when you learn that it's better to control a property than it is to own a property, then you realize that you're a different game at a different level, and you've mastered the game, folks. So with that being said, again, I thank you for listening to today's show. Next Wednesday at 2 p.m., we're going to continue to delve deeper down into extra strategies, lease options in particular, how to locate good investment deals, and what properties and what neighborhoods I suggest you avoid. Again, all of this is coming from my perspective. There's no hard facts. Every real estate agent, every real estate investor, every real estate developer has their perspective, their strategies. I'm sharing you mine. So again, thank you for your time. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Talk to you all next week. And until then, let's continue to be more conscious. Let's build conscious communities. Information.